Welcome to the Score Podcast.
What could $340 billion buy? A few houses, for sure. Indeed, that's the amount of commitment made by corporations to address the growing racial justice and wealth gap in the United States. So how's that coming? I'm Jeff Richardson, host of the Score Podcast. In the wake of the murder of George Floyd, large corporations stepped up and made multi-billion dollar commitments to addressing historical injustices, primarily in the justice system itself, but also importantly targeted at closing the racial wealth gap. According to consulting giant McKinsey, in 2019, the average black family's wealth stood at $24,100, about an eighth of what the average white family possessed. A lack of access to financial services, specifically banking insurance, according to McKinsey, is both a symptom of and cause of the gap. And joining me today is Donovan Duncan, Executive Vice President of Urban Strategies, a national nonprofit that was founded in 1978, and it's a leader in the field of community development, supporting more than 30,000 low to moderate income families and approximately 100,000 individuals in 49 communities in 25 major metropolitan areas, calling St. Louis, Missouri as its base. Donovan has over 20 years of experience in the development and housing industry and has closed over $750 million in real estate transactions. He brings considerable experience with managing federal, state, and local regulations related to implementing outstanding housing and neighborhood transformation solutions. Donovan's expertise includes community revitalization and development initiatives, resident services, minority and female participation, Section 3, single and multifamily housing analysis and financing, economic development, and neighborhood stabilization programs. He has also been successful in implementing the result-based accounting framework across the nation and has a diversity, equity, and inclusion certification from Cornell. Donovan is also, at least for the next few weeks, the chairman of the Credit Builders Alliance Board, which, as a fellow board member myself, provides me the privilege of seeing Donovan's passion and work up close and in person. Donovan, thank you for joining the Score Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with a little bit of background on Urban Strategies. How does Urban Strategies Incorporated work with communities to improve the lives of children, youth, families, and adults, and the community as a whole? And can you kind of give me some specific examples of how these programs have been implemented at the hyper-local level?
Urban Strategies has been a national organization for the last 45 years, getting our start as community organizers in one neighborhood in St. Louis, Missouri. We had the premise that for communities to be cultivated and grow, individuals need to be stable and thriving. Our goal is to ensure there's adequate education opportunities for young persons and adults, to ensure that there's family-sustaining wage jobs for a community, to use housing as a platform for all of this collective transformation, because we believe if a family or individual is not stably housed, everything else cannot be stable as well. I mean, there's some examples of how we work in community. I'll give two hyper-local examples. For a federal program that's place-based called the Choice Neighborhood Initiative, that program has three components: housing, neighborhood, and people. The goal is to revitalize old, dilapidated public housing or project-based housing community, but do it from the angle of supporting individuals and helping cultivate their growth. And we believe that support of those individuals help strengthen the neighborhood, which also impacts the ecosystem of housing as you're thinking through revitalization. Another hyperlocal initiative I'll talk about is PERC, the Partnership for Equitable and Resilient Communities. PERC is a justice venture where we're trying to leverage federal, state, and local resources to help Black, Brown, and Indigenous individuals really reposition their community from their standpoint. With this unprecedented amount of federal investment that is currently being deployed across the country, our work, collective work, is to leverage as much of those dollars as possible to respective cities and to these respective marginalized communities to really start to think about wealth creation, housing production, what is the right infrastructure that's required, and how do we use the lens of economic mobility to ensure that those marginalized groups are better off.
Thanks for that explanation, Donovan, and those are really impressive examples. Related to the topic is a rule or regulation that we talk about on this podcast to some degree, and that's the Community Reinvestment Act. And I'm guessing you're quite familiar with it. So what is your assessment of the current state of the CRA and its impact on underserved communities? And where is improvement critically needed? And kind of getting back to my intro, what's your assessment of some of the major commitments corporations have made that I mentioned that are targeted at closing the racial wealth gap?
As you indicated in your intro, many organizations made very big commitments to racial equity and committed to really being catalytic and informative and really using their power of their resources to drive change. I'm not 100% sure if that change is happening or those resources are being deployed in the way that is equitable for the intended users that was originally a part of the focus group. In the communities in which we work in, we don't see a tremendous amount of transformation from, you know, corporate and business sponsors. So we do understand there, not to say I don't want to cast a blanket statement across all industries, right? There are amazing organizations who are doing powerful work to really be part of this catalytic change and meet this moment. But I believe, similar to CRA, it's intent versus impact, right? I think organizations and CRA intended on being catalytic and driving change within respective communities. When we think about the communities in which we work in, when we start in a particular place, average income is somewhere between $5,000 and $7,000. CRA is not thinking through a strategy to help those individuals get more money into their households. So I think we have to be very intentional about what issues that we're trying to address when we talk about systems reform and tools similar to CRA. And this notion, as I think this through, is transactional versus transformational. Transactionals talk about what are the things that we need to do to ensure that we're in compliance with our obligation under CRA. Transformational change talks about what is the ecosystem and the partnership that I need to create to ensure that communities thrive. And I think that's the missing part when we think about CRA.
Housing is in your background. And right now, there is a chasm with regard to the racial home ownership gap. So what is your message to aspiring homeowners, given the very high prices out there and rising interest rates? And what can our nation's largest mortgage lenders do to increase mortgage finance opportunities for underserved, yet credit-worthy borrowers?
I started thinking about homeownership and what does it mean? And, you know, understanding that more Americans own a home now than any year following the Great Recession, and with homeownership rates being somewhere around 65% since 2020. And also understanding that Black homeownership remains pretty flat and lower than it was a decade ago, and nearly 30 percentage points behind white homeownership. And we're thinking about Hispanic homeownership rose all over time, reaching the close to 50%, but still somewhere 20 percentage points difference between white homeownership. And then I thought about a thought leadership piece we released around homeownership and its access to wealth creation. And one of the individuals who were featured in that piece talked about living in New York and trying to get their home appraised and the appraisal being vastly different two times, and the air rights on top of their home being more valuable than their actual home. In this case, this individual had what people would perceive the American dream. They worked for a very large, the C-suite, very large multi-billion dollar organization, spouse and partner, also C-suite and another multi-billion dollar business. And in this report, she indicated that everything she owned was less valuable because of her race. And I use that as we're thinking through the housing industry and what can mortgage finance companies or banks do is to really think about, again, what does the transformational opportunity look like to partner with marginalized subgroups or people who have had experience that are contrary to what we deem as the American dream, and to believe in that, right? Because I truly believe the message that I'm trying to convey is that we as Americans can solve complicated issues and get to the heart of a matter if we're really intentional about what the issue is. And so what I would tell folks who are interested in aspiring to be homeowners, do it. There should not be nothing that precludes you from calling a place your home and being part of the homeownership ecosystem. It is the best thing that I did, you know, following myself and purchasing a home. 18 people in my family are now homeowners. So it is the right move. It was the right step to take. Not to say that it won't be hard or complicated or you won't have challenges. It also creates the ability to build wealth in a way that you can leave something behind to your next generation.
It's somewhat related to the housing question because it impacts whether a person can afford the monthly payments. And I'm speaking of student loans. We all know, and we've covered on this podcast, the end of the forbearance period was in October, and it's obviously been a hot topic in the news. My guess is you and your colleagues at Urban Strategy have been engaged on this topic. So what is your message for borrowers of color or policymakers that worry about the impact on the resumption of these payments on monthly budgets?
When we think about Urban Strategies, and our contribution to this conversation about higher education and student loans, we believe in the educational apparatus. We believe that someone who experiences poverty, the most succinct way for them to grow out of poverty is to obtain an education. So we work tirelessly to improve income equality and support educational attainment by minimizing debt. So we're trying to leverage scholarships and other financial resources with the communities in which we support to ensure that college can be an affordable option for individuals. Other reason that we're extremely committed to this conversation, the largest subsection of employees within the Urban Strategy system are African-American women. And I remember ThoughtCo released an article that said Black women are the most educated group in the U.S. and still the lowest wage owners. So when we think about this conversation around affordable college attainment, as we say that, you know, graduating from college is the most succinct way for you to increase your economic standing. And we have other data points that suggest that, you know, white women who graduate from college have 35 times the wealth of Black women who graduate from college. And white women without college degrees have 5 times the wealth of Black women without college degrees and 5.5 times that of Black women with college degrees. So we use this as the segue for how we started with African-Americans having a wealth average of $24,000. And we're talking about student loans and things that really impact a monthly budgeting. And we talk about, like, how do we get to identifying the wealth gap and reducing it? All these things are factors, right? We have to think about economics in the sense of pay equity. We have to think about how do we make the college experience an affordable solution? And then we have to think about what are the other transformational ways that we support individuals and communities so that individuals can have a thriving life.
Those are all very specific initiatives that we need to focus on as a country and as corporate leaders. And Donovan, let's leave it there. This was a very important and poignant and personal podcast for me and for you, I know. I just want to thank you and wish you and your friends, colleagues, and family a happy holidays and appreciate your conversation today.
Thank you for your time.
Despite the best intentions, media reports suggest that it's been challenging for large institutions to distribute the funds that they've committed. But for sure, there are experts like Donovan that can offer unique, informed insights and strategies to create impactful programs to address the challenges that Donovan just described. Trust me, I think he'll take your call. I'm Jeff Richardson, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Views and opinions expressed in this episode do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of VantageScore Solutions. Visit VantageScore.com to learn more.